Okay, hello there, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources 12 here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hurst from the CFRU News Team. Adam, are you going to have some pie on Pi Day? Is that happening, or does that happen in your world?
Like a whole pie, frozen pie left over from Christmas that I finished like last week, and so I kind of went too early, I guess.
So you got an advance on Pi Day then? Is that...
I got a Pi Day advance, sure. Let's call it that. Let's call it a Pi Day advance and not just, you know, what do you call that? Emotional dependency eating? Is that a thing? I don't know.
could be, but yeah.
That may be too real for 5 o'clock on Thursday.
I think so, yes.
All right. Well, hopefully this show doesn't get too serious. What are we talking about? Oh, no. Okay. Anyway, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. This week, though, it's just the news. Including Gaza, there has not yet been, as of this recording, any attack on Rafah, but international relations are being strained as Israeli PM Netanyahu refuses to back down. Is the war near a breaking point? Then, the government of Canada wants to combat harms afflicted to vulnerable people online, but can the federal government actually do anything when it comes to the internet, or even just do it right? And finally, one of our princesses is missing, but this is actually more than just tabloid drama. I just a little sneak preview for the end of the show, because I'm going to try and take this in a new direction. But first, drama closer to home, at least drama in our hemisphere, Haiti. I feel like we forget about Haiti until something bad happens, like an earthquake or a violent gang takeover of the country, but that seems to be where we are. Haiti has been, over the last several weeks, in the midst of, nobody's calling it a coup, but it sure sounds like a coup. Several of the gangs in the country led a prison break, releasing some of the most violent felons in the country, and they seem to have more or less taken it over, or at least taken over the capital city, Port-au-Prince. This all happened while Prime Minister Ariel Henry was out of the country. Fun fact about Prime Minister Ariel Henry, nobody ever elected him. So while he was abroad, I believe he was in Kenya trying to rally support for some kind of international relief effort in the form of both troops and humanitarian aid. A bunch of violent gang members, some jailed, some never been jailed, have taken over his country. He has since resigned, or at least he has announced he intends to resign once a provisional government of some kind has been established. But it's once again a reminder, Haiti is one of those places in our hemisphere. You know, we like to look abroad and to places like Africa and the Middle East and Southeast Asia and go, wow, that seems pretty messed up. But we have lots of messed up places kind of right here closer to home. And Scotty, I'm sure we'll get into this a bit further. Canada, not exactly hands clean when it comes to this either.
No, that's very true, although it seems that the U.S. and others are trying to convince Canada to intervene. Mm. And this seems to be a recurring theme, part of it being that we don't really want to do it, so can you do it by proxy for us? Yeah, and you have to go back to the coup d'etat against Aristide, and what was that, 2004, right?
Mm-hmm.
Haiti's just been in this long spiral, and you mentioned some of the factors, one of which is recurring natural disasters, earthquakes. But an offshoot of that is the fact that the gangs, a lot of them acquired money that was to go to programs to help people after the earth. And I'm saying earthquakes because what was it? It was 2010. And then there was that subsequent one in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people saw opportunity, including, can you call him the top gang leader, I guess? AKA Barbecue. You know, Haiti's top gangster isn't exactly going to be the fix for everything that's going on either. He's ex-police, and he said he was inspired by Duvalier, and if you know that name, I mean, just not good. If that's your inspiration, whether it's Papa Doc or Baby Doc Duvalier, who were the, you know, long-running corrupt family that ran Haiti into the ground as well. And that seems to be what's on repeat. Now, you'd mentioned that Henry was in Kenya. They was trying to recruit a team of police to go and enforce law and order, but that's been canceled. So, or at least postponed. It probably won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened, though, that was announced today that I thought was interesting, that a team of U.S. Marines have been deployed. It didn't say how many, but on the weekend, the U.S. Embassy had evacuated all of its staff due to conditions, which are terrible. But then it was announced today, these Marines. Now, there's a history in the Caribbean of Marines landing and things happening, let's say. Pick your country, whether it's Grenada or, you know, you name it. So not sure where that's going to go. I mean, it's possible that they're just there to... They said they were being sent to protect the embassy, but the embassy's now empty. So
yeah,
it's a bit hazy as to why they're there. But the U.S. doesn't seem too interested in trying to initiate sending a force in as they have done in the past, which we were affiliated with as well. It's more like, who can we find to take care of this and do our bidding? So,
yeah, it's hard to blame the U.S. It's not hard at all. But it is, with things in Ukraine, things in Israel, which we'll talk about in a second, it's not easy being the world police, even if that is a role that you sort of happily take upon yourself. And especially, like, what is the, I hate to put it just to basic commerce, but, like, what's the benefit of helping Haiti to any of these global superpowers? It's impoverished. It's been corrupted for years. Nobody seems to be able to stay in power very long. They've had one peaceful transition of power in the last 30-40 years, and it's prone to these sort of natural disasters, and it's also weird that, you know, they have Dominican Republic right next door, which is this country. I mean, so they're all both on the same island. One half is the Dominican Republic, one half is Haiti. On the one hand, you have this greatly impoverished, deeply corrupt country. On the other, you have this, semi-corrupt, but flush, at least for a few, country where, tourism dollars go, millions, if not billions of dollars in tourism. And just, even in these areas where there is gross inequity, there's even more gross inequity. And there just seems to be no, even just a basic desire to put Haiti back on track. And it seems like it's been very hard watching things happen on our news the last couple of weeks. Occasionally, reports about what's going on in Haiti somehow managed to make it to the surface, and they're all kind of bad. Like things like, these gangs running checkpoints in and out of different neighborhoods, and there are Canadians in Haiti who are hunkered down. And it's not like things were relatively stable in Haiti. I was reading an interview with one guy who has a mattress factory there, and he talked about how his trucks leaving the city had to pay a fee to the gangs in order to, for his trucks to leave the city unmolested. So, I mean, a lot of it has just been it's just bad. And unlike other places in the world, there just seems to be no willingness for anyone to do anything, which is why you have a lot of this buck passing. And the buck's been passed for years and years, and here's another thing. Remember a couple of summers ago when the president of Haiti was assassinated? Mm-hmm. Also still unsolved. I was reading, I was like, oh yeah, that's a thing that happened. The president of Haiti was assassinated and nobody caught the guy who did it, which is why you get it, Ariel Henry. But it just, all there's been warning signs just for years, and it just seems like even in the interest of just being good humanitarians, nobody's wanted to do anything to help Haiti. And this is kind of where you arrive. Just a mess.
Yeah, and it seems the plan is now, the other Caribbean leaders had met in Jamaica, an emergency meeting. I think it is being overseen by the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
They are involved as they're within the sphere. I'm not actually sure if there's Canadian representation there. If there is, they might not be at the table, but there will definitely be a Canadian representation there. It's to create some kind of what they're calling a transitional council.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Henry said today that he has to sign off on that. That shouldn't be too difficult. Where is he stuck? Is Puerto Rico or something, right? He's not.
Yeah, he's in
not
Puerto
far
Rico.
Away.
They wouldn't even let him land in Dominican Republic.
Yeah, Dominican Republic doesn't want any part of it, right? I mean, it's so weird that they're attached, yet they can be such radically different places.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the difference. If put it this way, I think if Haiti had more of something that the U.S. wanted, resource-wise,
mm-hmm.
because they're a bit poor in that respect as well. I think there's like bauxite or something, but it's not in any volume. If it was something like that, or if they were influential enough, like on a Fidel Castro level,
mm-hmm.
the government there, then the U.S. would just invade, right? So it's not, or get somebody to do their bidding, like I said earlier. That would be how it would change. But the tone is, they keep saying, we need to have an election, we need to have an election. Is that going to fix it? I mean, mm-hmm. how far along are we from the 2010 earthquake and everything previously? They mentioned Aristide. Go back years and years. There just seems to be this cycle that they can't escape. And they've had elections in the past, and it's like you just seem to get more of the same. What will be interesting? Are any of the gangs going to run in the elections? And if yeah. so, how well would they mm-hmm. do? Could Barbecue be the next president of Haiti? Like, it's just...
I'd love to see some vote barbecue signs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like none of the current lawmakers are elected. Like, Mosey, the president who was assassinated, he was like putting off elections, and then Henry comes to power and he's like, yeah, we'll have some elections like sometime next year, like just relax everyone, we'll get around to elections eventually, which just seems to be like this kind of snotty attitude that probably turned off a lot of people from wanting to support him or stand up to him. It just seems like it's down to like basic, I mean, it's essentially martial law, except there's no law. It's just martial. And then you have, running out of supplies. You have people, foreigners there who are, concerned about what's going to happen to them. And, everyone's trying to get out of Port-au-Prince. Everybody's hunkered down. Nobody's out on the streets. Nobody wants to cross any of these gangs, least of all Barbecue himself, which what does it take to be the gang leader who gets that nickname? I'm not sure I want to know, but it's just a mess of a situation. And I mean, we can blame leaders all we want, but I mean, again, I keep coming back to the fact that it just feels like we weren't paying attention either. I'm not saying that we have the power to do anything, but just in terms of sort of global awareness, it's amazing to me how this country in this much trouble in our own hemisphere has managed to be just so far under the radar for so long, and it took like a violent gang insurrection to get even this level of attention paid to them. It's really kind of a shame on us.
Yeah, and as we'll talk about with Gaza too, they're trying to get aid into it. It's that desperate a situation, but
mm-hmm.
it seems when it arrives, it just gets pilfered, like doesn't get out of the dock. The World Food Program is involved, right? That's
mm-hmm.
they're needing to do. Well, mm-hmm. it's exclusively maritime aid, obviously, but it's kind of failing as well. There's not very much getting through. So healthcare is suffering.
Well, the port's closed down, like the major port. Like one of the first things the gangs took was the port,
mm-hmm.
and they went through there, looted everything. So the port is practically useless. So what they're doing to get supplies in is like you have these big cargo ships parked off the shore, and then you have them going out in rowboats or little, motorboats to like those don't carry a lot of supplies. And that's, I mean, 20-30 minute trip there and back again. Come on, it's mm-hmm. it, it's you know, it's like dropping food and water and medical supplies with an eyedropper, and you know, a whole country is thirsty for these things. So,
and barbecue and the fellows will want a cut, right? So,
oh, well, I mean, they don't even wait to ask for their cut; they just take it. I mean, that's kind of the part that's been part of the problem the whole time, is they've been taking cuts all the while.
So yeah, it doesn't sound the kind of thing that just an election, wave a magic wand, and that's going to fix it. So
no,
they need more, and that's the great question. It's like, where does that come from? If you send money, you send resources, they disappear, it sounds like. So try and find a friendly country, presumably like Canada. There was problems when the UN was there back in 2010, right? Was it cholera outbreaks? People stopped trusting the UN. So it's just...
Well, I mean, there were huge health issues after the earthquake. Like, there were so many people
too. That's Fred's cholera. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there were so many people dead, you know, being buried in mass graves. It was, you know, it had all sorts of ancillary health effects beyond, but yeah, it's a mess, and we'll have to try and revisit this again as soon as there are some new developments. Constant new developments going on in Gaza, where this week we were expecting an attack on Rafah, which is kind of the last unoccupied area of Gaza, kind of where all the refugees have been gathered in that are left in this strip. This comes at a time when Joe Biden, in an interview, well, first of all, he made some statements about in the State of the Union about wanting a ceasefire, and then he went so far as to draw red lines in an interview on Sunday, where he said he did not want to see an invasion of Rafah City or another 30,000 people dead. Those were red lines. Benjamin Netanyahu said, more or less, editorializing, of course, but this was kind of more or less his intent, "I spit on your red line." And so that's kind of where we are, is that you have Joe Biden, who's sort of finally saying the things a lot of people wished he were saying 150 days ago. And predictably, Benjamin Netanyahu not caring.
Yeah, don't cross this red line until you cross it. And that's like this. Yeah, well, we don't know. It's this bizarro situation where it's like with U.S. bankrolling a lot of what's going on and sending weapons, among other things, which I'm not sure if it's like a buyback, lend lease for the weapons, or like just here's weapons as well. Well, but then, you know, we have to make it seem like we're doing something. So we're going to drop aid sometimes on top of people. And then they're trying to build some kind of port. I don't know all the details about that, but it just seems like, can you have enough power? Why can you not get your people there? And I'm saying as U.S. to Israel, to behave, and they won't.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this before. I don't know if some of it is an election year, but it's always this, right? Can't have American perception being that any president on down is against Israel, or dare we say perceived to be anti-Semitic, which we know isn't the case. But yeah, so the Ramadan ceasefire slipped away. I guess there's still talks going on. We don't really hear too much about them unless you check out other news services. And I mean other, like, not necessarily mainstream, saying, yeah, there's talks in Doha, it's Qatar and Egypt. But it's still one side blaming the other. They can't get around that, where it's, you know, the Hamas versus Israel is just not, that's the stalemate currently. Keep hearing these little bits and pieces like, oh, it's so close, we're so close to an agreement, but it's just kind of trading, right? Like, we'll give you this for this. That's how negotiations work. But meanwhile, I mean, the starvation toll is adding up. I heard 27. It has to be more people than that. And of course, you've seen some of the images coming out of Gaza of people that are just like, it's like something out of the Ethiopian crisis or whatever. I'm sure there's people who will say, oh, that's all fake. But, you know, I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, part of the problem is the UN Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, that had been accused of being involved in the October 7th attack somehow, or that 12 of the workers were involved in the attacks. Of course, now the Israeli Defense Forces is saying, well, there's more like 450 people, which has been backed up. And certainly no one from the UN Relief Agency has been charged or arrested with anything, although they have been sort of taken and questioned. And there are some relief workers who say that they were pressured and attempted to coerce them into, you know, confessing to things. They weren't treated very well by the Israelis during questioning. Meanwhile, you know, Canada and Sweden have both said, well, we're going to fund, you know, the relief agency again, which might help. But then again, their building in Gaza was bombed today. There were 5 people killed there. Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, what a relief there is. And, you know, the U.S. is, yeah, they're going to build this dock, like they send 1,000 people, and you know the Pentagon swears up and down, don't worry, no boots on the ground, no boots on the ground. I guess they're all on the water. But then, you know, they're doing these airdrops where they've dropped about 35,000 meals so far, about 28,000 bottles of water. Millions of people live there, like millions, like so, like a fraction, like 1% of people got a meal and a bottle of water, maybe. Like, is that what counts as humanitarian aid now? That's not good. That's, you know, speaking to your, you know, some of the images you talked about. It's like, it's no wonder people there are fighting over food. If that's the fight, if you're going to be like one of the people to get a meal and a bottle of water out of 9 airdrops, I mean, yeah, that's incredible.
It's just gone immediately, right? There's no...
Yeah.
And if Israel's bombing, you know, the relief agency food center, as you said, like,
mm-hmm.
all those bags of flour, they're Hamas, right? It's just...
Yeah.
This is the problem with it. Everything's Hamas. Everything that's not nailed down is Hamas. They just label it, oh, it's... Yeah, they don't even hide it, right? Now, mm-hmm. Speaking of other aid, I heard something about a pilot project... I don't even know why the hell they're calling it a pilot project, because we know just take food across land and go in and feed people should work, right? But
mm-hmm.
I guess there's like a couple of charities involved, maybe the UN behind it. You know, we're going to deliver food across the land to try. It's like 4 trucks. It's something minimal. It's like, how is this a pilot project? We know this is what works. Open the borders, get people out of the way, get the settlers that are protesting, all those fools out of the way, and get stuff in there. But there's holdups for like ridiculous reasons. I heard one aid, I'm not sure if it was a truck or however it was being delivered, was held up because it had like scissors for medical use or something. It's like, no, those can't yeah. go in, those are weapons.
Sounds right.
It's just beyond silly season. It's like, so what are you going to let in? Is it just bags of flour? And then of course they'll be implying there that aid is being stolen, as we talked about in Haiti. Mm. However, I can't remember his name. There was a U.S. diplomat said that Israel hasn't provided any specific evidence that things like assistance is being diverted or stolen, because the need's so great, right? It's
well,
like,
I mean,
anybody that wanted to steal it would need it as well. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not being, they're trying, the implication is Hamas is taking everything. Hamas is controlling everything. It's like, I don't think that's the case.
Well, I mean, what is stolen? Like, if I'm like, you know, starving to death and I'm walking by the side of the road and there's an apple tree in your yard and I go in and take an apple, is that stealing? I guess technically, but you know, is someone going to take you to court for taking an apple off of a tree? Again, this is one of those situations where it's like, it's bad, it looks bad, it's getting worse. And like 150 days too late, you kind of have like the American media establishment finally turning. Like Thomas Friedman had a editorial in the New York Times today. It's like, you know what? Netanyahu, he's making Israel radioactive. Or like, he's making Israel radioactive. It's, you know, a lot of, you know, yeah, there are anti-Semitic people who are using this to their advantage, but I think there's also a lot of people who are just aghast that of the disproportionality of the Israeli response. If you go to a pro-Palestinian or a Palestinian support rally, nobody there is saying Israel doesn't have a right to defend itself. But as we talked about before, if you have 1,400 people who die on the Israeli side one day, and then you spend the next 5 months killing 20 times as many people, and one third of them maybe are the people responsible for the attack in the first place, is that proportional? Things have gotten so supremely out of whack in this regard. And it's funny to hear Benjamin Netanyahu. He was asked about Biden's red line. And first of all, U.S. presidents need to stop issuing red lines, because red lines are never red lines. But Netanyahu was asked about Biden's red line, and he's like, well, my red line is to make sure October 7th is never happening. And it's like, dude, you could have stopped October 7th from happening in the first place if you'd paid attention to some of the intelligence warnings you were getting. You didn't. So this kind of gets to sort of the final analysis of this. Benjamin Netanyahu, who has no plan, and Friedman pointed this out, has no plan for what he's going to do with an occupied Gaza once Rafah falls, is basically putting off his own eventual political defeat. Because as long as Israel's at war, nobody's thinking about his corruption. And I think that's what this is all about. And we've kind of been saying that all the while, that as long as they're at war, nobody's thinking about him packing the courts or trying to fight corruption charges that have been leveled against him. Because it's just like when he says, my red line is I want to make sure October 7th isn't happening again. And you have all these reports that the Israeli government ignored warnings that it was coming. What else are you supposed to think? The war is the thing.
Yeah, from the young women and the signals that saw the traffic coming and they were summarily ignored.
Yeah.
So there's more going on there with that. But yeah, and you have to wonder, will there ever be the reckoning with him and his people for the, well, babies, elders, relief workers, journalists, you name it, that it remains to be seen. Is it world court stuff, or is it just, does he just quietly go away and join boards of directors of arms companies or something, which is usually what happens in these instances? But it's okay, because you know, everybody's wearing their pins at the Oscars, right? So
there was some powerful,
that's gonna fix everything,
speeches.
Right?
Well, I mean, you know, to have Jonathan Glazer, who's a Jewish filmmaker, just won an Oscar for a movie about the Commandant of Auschwitz, to basically say, you know, what's happening in Palestine is a tragedy. I mean, that there is something powerful to that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, the Oscars aren't gonna solve anything, not that we expect them to. Certainly, no. They didn't solve giving Best Actor to the right person this past. Anyway, that's an end credits problem. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break and then come right back with Canada problems. You are listening to Open Source's Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
In these unprecedented times, I'm your only peace of mind. So listen. Oh, yes, I know. I know you hear me now.
That song's from a fantastic album I discovered in our new releases library called Africa Town, Alabama, Ancestor Sounds, by various artists. I couldn't actually find who the artist was that sang that song. It's all the songs are by descendants of the last slave ship that went to the United States. And it was as late as 1860. There's a whole story there. Highly recommend you check that album out. Anyway, that song was called Do You Hear Me Now?
Do You Hear Me Now? Which is something that people who are concerned about too much government regulation over the internet and free speech are probably asking. In this case, it's about the Online Harms Act, which was announced a couple of weeks ago. They finally had the technical briefing for it on Wednesday. Although Interesting timing because the United States House of Representatives moved to ban TikTok in the United States on Wednesday too. So it's been kind of a weird week for banning stuff. But in this case, the Online Harms Act attempts to solve a number of problems in regards to hate speech online, including new regulations for social media platforms in terms of the display of stuff that people didn't consent to, whether that is things like child pornography, which seems to be a particular emphasis of this bill, but also things like revenge porn as well. It's also created several new government roles, including a council of five. It's going to be cabinet appointed, who are essentially going to be in charge of overseeing the regulation and making sure social medias are responsive, and then a online harm ombudsman who is going to be an advocate for people. Understandably, this has some people concerned. You have government mucking around in what is and is not free expression. I fall somewhat short of somebody like Jordan Peele, Jordan Peterson. Sorry, that's a weird Freudian slip. Jordan Peterson, who's been having a bit of a jihad against Sesame Street characters lately for some reason. but he thinks this is Trudeau finally, parentheses, showing his tyranny. I'm of the point of view, like, this government really hasn't gotten anything right on the internet, so why do we think they're going to get it right this time? I don't know. Scotty, what do you think?
I think that we're in this weird place where Jordan Peterson and Margaret Atwood are on the same side.
Yeah.
In a discussion, right?
Yeah.
That's come out. It's a strange bedfellows, I guess you'd say, but also a little bit out of a dystopian novel that Margaret Atwood might write.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of Jordan Peterson's main issues is that, you know, some of the stuff he said would probably get him into more trouble under these regulations.
Almost certainly.
As if he isn't in enough. Well, he's not going to go to, he's probably not going to get life in prison for something, which is,
Scotty, he's not going to be happy until Elmo hangs himself in the bathroom.
I thought a lot of that was fake, actually, but it's hard to tell now. But I saw him saying
nothing
like,
says I'm a manly man.
So I'm like, what?
Like harassing a 3-year-old Muppet that's a red monster who has a dog named Tango. But that's what a guy, Jordan Peterson.
Under these regs, I guess that's allowed, right? How did the Minister Varani put it? It's like, we're not worried about your insults. We're not worried about things you might say are offensive, or if you have a joke, an off-color joke or an impolite joke. It's more like detestation and vilification. So I don't know if detestation of a Muppet is far enough, right? Like, you hate Sesame Street. You're gonna potentially. If somebody had a problem with it, Sesame Street Workshop, I can't believe we've ended up talking about Sesame Street, but this is almost Sesame Street level, right? I mean, the darker level is that the intention of this, I think, is anything regarding kids, trying to put the onus on the platforms to try and crack down on that, the super darkness that is the internet, not just people insulting whomever. And
well, there's certainly room to enforce, but it you know, again, have we had any success in making these companies do the things we want them to do vis-a-vis the News Act? Like, still can't post news on Facebook in Canada.
Yeah.
It's been a year.
So much for free speech and
yeah,
all those important things. But yeah, and I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. The comment I saw from Polyev, and he's being a bit quiet on this because he knows that Canadians support this. I saw one poll, I think it was Leger, said like 70% of people support tighter restrictions on a lot of the garbage that's on the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Polyev is like, in fighting it, they're just creating more bureaucracy. And I don't think that's incorrect, right? What is it? The Digital Safety Commission? That sounds like something out of a novel. The Digital Safety Commission will take care of it. And, you know, but the thing with Polyev is like he's okay with the 2 minutes hate aspect if you want to go Orwellian, right?
Mm.
They love that. And Jordan Peterson loves that. You know, he doesn't want to dial back the rhetoric on certain things, but you know, when it comes to like trans people in toilets. Because that creeps into the level of like, is that hate speech? Ask a trans person. I'm sure they think that's hate speech, right? And it is. So maybe that's why he's kind of keeping out of it, but
I think there's an expectation on Polyev's part that this may be like one of those self-immolation moments for the liberals. And you know, when they're talking about, you know, a life sentence for, you know, talking about promoting a genocide online, and it's like, I'm sure like on the surface, like, yeah, that sounds fine. Like, cause what kind of person is promoting a genocide? But you know, on the other hand, does that person actually have the ability to launch a genocide? And if they don't, then why are we putting them in jail for life? And the other thing too, and Jen Gerson made this point in the Line newsletter, you know, something like groomer, which does have a hateful connotation when it's being leveled against, say, members of the trans community.
Mm.
But, you know, are we really talking about like putting people in jail for years on a hate crime because they called somebody groomer on Twitter? I'm not sure that sits well with me. There has to be a portion of this, and we're going to get into this in a sec with the next story. But in terms of like a digital literacy, I think that's like the big piece we're missing from this, is like there needs to be a portion of this to like understand, first of all, understand language, second of all, understand the impact of marginalized groups of some of this language, understanding how the internet works, understanding how media works, like deep fakes, understanding how a girl may take a picture of herself naked, sharing an intimate picture with you, and it's supposed to be just you, and then you're sharing it to all your buds, like, look at how hot this girl I've been hanging out with is, or something like that. That is the type of violation that this law is supposed to get at. But how many, like, 15, 16, 17-year-olds are going to understand, like, the seriousness of that, especially when you have people, let's call them of the Polyev persuasion, who are like fighting against, you know, any renewed sex ed curriculum that takes into account all of these modern concerns, you know? So it's, I mean, there's something to this that the Petersons of the world who don't like modern sex ed and being made aware of the different qualities of queerness out there and are fighting it tooth and nail, and then being against this, where there needs to be some education to this. Like, I don't want to put a 17-year-old kid in jail for sharing an intimate photo of a girl. Maybe you should, I don't know. But I think there needs to be some education to this to make that kid understand why sharing that picture with his friends would be wrong before we start saying, you know what kind of penalty should he get when he does this? Like, let's put the horse before the cart, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
And maybe that's to be the job of the Digital Safety Commission to explore.
Oh, my Lord, hope not.
Well, but yeah, like, because I don't know how you police that. I mean, but the best, a lot of it is to do with education. It's like, kids, if you're listening, just don't do it.
Yeah.
I was in the IT business for a lot of years, and it was like right out of the gate, it's like when that became possible to share photos. Yes, I've been in it that long. It was like, just don't do it, because it's for,
it,
as
took,
I say,
5 hours to finish the download. But Scotty,
yeah, but you know, but people were doing it, right? But even then, it's forever. Like, I don't know how far back you can go, but it's like, just it's the same with your emails. Like, just don't
sure,
do.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, for that's, sure, that's the aspect of it. Is it like, Going back to Orwell, and it's funny, a lot of the people that quote Orwell in that have never read it, but are we in thought crime territory where it's like...
They haven't even read the wiki page, but yeah, go on.
could this person potentially do this? Is this person potentially going to promote hate in the future? And if so, should we shut them down now, right? It's like, well, that doesn't really work either. But I think the almost universal agreement is anything regarding children. It's like just...
Right. I think
hunt
that's
them down. Shut them down.
I think that's very, very clear. My question is, what happens if it's like I'm a 17-year-old kid and I'm going to these protests for Palestinians, and I share a tweet that says, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." Like, am I going to jail for that? Because it could be taken as an inference I'm talking about genocide. I could be thinking, I just want, you know, Palestinians to be left alone. I don't want Palestinians to be murdered. But there is a version of that people see as kind of hate speech, that you want to wipe Israel off the map. And it's like, no, I just want Palestinians to be free. But now do I have a police record because I'm politically active and I'm worried about the plight of Palestinian people? I think that's the dark corridor of this that has too many unanswered questions.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and the challenge and problem with social media is, like, rather than just sharing catchphrases, like, why don't you just give us your actual thoughts a little bit more nuanced and expanded?
I mean, this isn't
maybe
a thing.
Biased because that's what we do every week for an hour, right? Or half an hour. So,
well, that's true, but this isn't a thing where, like, Elon Musk sharing, like, the free speech, what's it called? The First Amendment protects memes, and the Second Amendment protects us sharing memes. It's like, that's like completely reductive and not what any of that means. It just, but there is somewhere between that and some of the lofty aspirations of this bill, there's a big gray area I don't think has been addressed.
Nope.
Okay, well, that brings us to the treat of the week, this story about the Princess of Wales, Catherine Middleton, who has not been seen in public since Christmas. I didn't think it was that far back, but it turned out it was that far back. It was the last time she was seen publicly, or she had made a public appearance. Buckingham Palace, or Kensington Palace, I guess, which is the Windsor's, the Wales's castle.
Part of the network, yeah.
Part of the network. Part of the firm. Released a Instagram photo of the Princess of Wales with the three children. It was quickly debunked as a Photoshop. I guess you could also call it a deep fake. Boy, were the internet sleuths out in force. I heard about this on CTV News. Now, it was a couple of weeks ago. CTV, massive job cuts in local news. But you better believe that the royal correspondent is on retainer still. And boy, was it like Watergate time for this woman. But leaving that aside, I will say there is like a serious issue afoot here, and I talked to somebody about it today, and I actually picked up on this watching Alex Wagner on MSNBC last night. Kensington Palace, which is part of the royal family, which is one of the oldest institutions in the Western world, put out a deepfake and tried to sell it as reality. And as sort of small potatoes as this scandal is, I think that's something we should take very, very seriously. They put out a deepfake and tried to sell it to us as real. And on top of it, it was a way for them to try and address all these conspiracy theories out there, and we can get into that all we want, but they try to cap a conspiracy theory with a deep fake. And in this day and age, that was the worst possible faux pas they could pull.
Well, what's also telling is that you'd said you didn't realize that she'd been out of the picture since December. And that's the thing is, the royals' challenge is that when they are out of the picture, they become less relevant. Now, if you're somebody like me that thinks they're completely irrelevant, that's one thing. But the majority of people, it's like, if they're there, it's like, oh, isn't it great? She's a great mom, and it's Mothering Sunday, and we need a Mother's Day picture, so we're going to knock one together. It's actually more of a shallow fake, right? Because it wasn't no one had six fingers, but there was some unnatural finger action going on there. It's like, this just looked weird. It looked, you don't have to be an expert to know that something was going on. But interestingly, Kate's one of the, and ironically, she's one of the patrons of what's called the Royal Photographic Society in the UK. It's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not actually sure if they said too much about it, but it was pointed out. It's like, okay, here she is in this institution because she had said she took the picture, right? Or no, she was the one that did the editing.
She had edited.
There's no way in hell she did the editing on this thing.
No.
When you're that level, people do these things for you, right? So fact
you
that
have people for that, yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't her. Trying to take credit for, I was fooling around with Photoshop and you're in the Royal Photographic Society or you're the patron of it and you can't edit a photo, right? So that's, some of it too is probably, we don't totally know what the extent of her health problems, but she's probably not looking as healthy and good as expected.
She's
so there's these expectations
ready,
yeah. that you have to look a certain way, but yeah. it's all the extension is the family have to look a certain way. I mean, those kids, there's like something out of a horror film. I don't know. I don't know how heavily they altered them, but like, it's just their normal. Like it was, there was just so much wrong about it. But of course the conspiracy theories become fun and they won't like that either, but it's better being fun than being Prince Andrew hiding in the back room there, whatever the hell is going on with him.
Well, these conspiracy theories aren't very fun, though. I mean, somebody was saying that, I guess in reference to something Harry said in his book, William has a bit of a temper, but like somebody said, like, oh, he went, he was angry at her and beat her so bad that she can't be seen in public because she's all, bruised around the face. And it's like that's not fun. That's not a fun conspiracy. Maybe getting into stuff like he's, getting into like infidelity, like that's not really fun either. But I mean, that's a little more lighthearted than spousal abuse. But I'm not sure how much of this is fun at all. I think it comes at an inopportune time because we have the king himself, fighting cancer. It's this time of transition. And somebody said to me today that they wondered if she was like the Princess of Wales taking a break because they expect that maybe the king isn't long for this world. And I mean, that's also kind of a conspiracy too. It's like they're chilling out but enjoying their last bit of freedom before having to undergo another coronation. But hey, I mean,
conjecture though, right?
Oh, I mean, it's all conjecture, but I mean, I'm kind of having flashbacks to the 90s with all that scandal around Diana, Princess of Wales, and like the palace was like dead silent then too. And when the Princess of Wales was killed, a lot of conspiracies around that. Still are a lot of conspiracies around that, but the palace was super quiet about that. It was days before the Queen made a public statement about Diana's death, and they were up in Scotland, kind of ensconced. And obviously, a lot of that was in their own grief. But you have to, they are a public facing institution, and you kind of have to be on the ball. You have to kind of be aware, and just there seems to be no awareness of sort of what this world is, how things are interpreted by an audience. And even just that, like, forgetting all the modern stuff, they flunked PR 101, which is that the cover-up is always worse than the infraction. So whatever's going on, no matter how benign it likely is, they've made this situation so much more worse with all of these shenanigans.
Well, let me correct my statement then. Some of the memes are fun. A lot of the memes are fun.
Sure.
Bernie Sanders surrounded by the kids is fun. Right? Or people doing the analysis. Like, it's
that's woman on TikTok doing the deep dive on the turtleneck, that was fun.
Yeah, but that's what I meant. So just to correct that. But I mean,
yeah.
Upside is, I mean, people know I have no time the aristocracy, right? So it's just like,
you're spared.
King Charles, the degree of his illness, they don't know. But the comment has been that, well, you know, he's working from home. It's like, well, doing what? Because you have to, as I said before,
king stuff.
King stuff. You have to be out there. Like, did they invent a virtual ribbon cutter, or, you know, I now declare this bridge open kind of stuff? Like,
that would be dope if there was a King Charles robot just like doing stuff.
Maybe that's awesome. What they're working on. It was add to the conspiracy. It's like,
I love it.
Like when they thought Brezhnev was an android, right? Going,
I hope it looks like Bender from Futurama, and it belches fire and everything.
The teeth just kind of light up and go whatever. But yeah, to remain relevant, they have to be seen, whether it's in a Photoshop picture or in person, who knows? But it's slipping away, and I think they can probably feel it slipping away. But
yeah,
but then. Again, like Daily Mirror, one of the report was like, it became all about Meghan Markle. It becomes about Meghan Markle again because they hate her that much. Somebody who's suffered a lot under stuff like this, right? I almost said their S word there, but it's like, you know, there are reasons to why they're in America now, away from everything that's going on. It's exactly this, but turn it up to 1,000. That's what she was being subjected to, right? And that's a huge part of them leaving the firm.
Yes, I mean that is interesting that they do seem to want to make it about Meghan and Harry, because I think there's a lot of some of it understandable, some of it not so understandable, like the racism. But yeah, it is amazing. It does make you wonder though, like in so much as like these you know papers and things want to seem like they're just fed up with everything royal. What would they do if the royal family went away? I saw this funny tweet. It's like, what if this was all like a scheme so that like, it's like the end of The Sound of Music when they're doing this song at the festival, and every time one of the kids leaves, they're like, they sneak out the back door,
the window,
to get away from the Nazis. Yeah. I enjoyed that particular theory, but we'll have to leave that there. Come back next week with some more theories. But anyway, yeah, that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. You can listen to us again by downloading this show every Monday from our website, and I almost said end credits. Anyway, from our website, opensourcesguelph.com, at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or through your favorite app like Apple, Google, TuneIn, and Spotify. You can stay connected to us on social media. We're on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and we're on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. I will return on CFRU Wednesday at 3 p.m. for that other show that I co-host. And you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out my news and politics site at GuelphPolitico.ca.
And I'm Scotty Hertz, not on Google Maps, but I am on Twitter, Facebook, and Blue Sky. And if you're joining us at our regular time on a Thursday at 5, please stay tuned at 6 for a newest show called A Volunteer Playlist.
Did you get word that people were looking for you on Google Maps? Like, Scotty, I tried to find you on Google Maps.
This is my flub from last week, right? Like, I almost said Google Maps, but maybe I should just put myself on Google Maps somewhere random.
That'd be
cool. Guelph Lake, there he is.
Right, stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. As for this show, we will return next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we will see you then.
Hi, this is Justin Trudeau. You're listening to CFIU 93.3 Guelph Campus Radio.